Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. This is going to be a short talk, well, short half an hour, about traffic analysis of encrypted web traffic, and then I hope we can have some questions and maybe a small discussion. I'm George Genesis, and I'll give you my email later if you want to contact me. Right. To start with, there is no security in absolute terms. There are only properties we protect. And the property we're going to talk about today, protecting it and attacking it as well, is privacy. Now, privacy does not only exist as an abstract concept in cyberspace. It is actually a right you have in the real world. The first right was in Human Rights Convention 47, so well before computers are here. But since then, there have been many legislations at EU level, national level, data protection. And then there have been many legislations striking a balance between the state and your personal right to privacy, interception of communication legislation, and also society as a whole and your right to privacy. There have been medical codes of conduct, privacy between you and your lawyer, quite a few of these things. But many times we think of privacy as something fundamental to defend democracy and all the rest, which it is, of course. But also, privacy is about everyday life. I have been involved in particular cases, and the most striking one was not about privacy in order to protect dissidents in countries where they are persecuted. The most important case I got involved in was very simple. A young woman from a particular cultural background goes to university. One day she goes to the hospital and asks for some emergency contraception, and that of course gets on her health record. When she leaves university, her record is transferred with her to her hometown and home doctor, but as it happens, her father is the local pharmacist, and that could create a very big problem for this young woman. She has a right to privacy in the UK, in law, and because of the European Conventions of Human Rights, and therefore she has a right to remove it. Very simple, nothing about protecting high moral standards or political standards. Very simple case, very important. So, what is privacy, though? I mean, in technical terms, how can we think of privacy? What is the relation of privacy with secrecy, to start with? Now, secrecy, in computer security terms, is about keeping content secret. Now, Alice says to Bob, "Charlie told me a secret, but I can't tell you what he said to me, because it's secret." And, of course, in that way, Alice protects Charlie's privacy. Now, the technical extension of secrecy is encryption. We've worked, the military before us have worked on secrecy and have developed systems. Then in the public domain in the 70s, we got public key encryption, which offers us additional properties. And we pretty much know how to do it now. It took a good 30 years, and it hasn't yet really hit the streets massively. But in theory, we have quite a good grasp of what to do in order to keep content secret. And slowly, with export regulations being eased and everything, we're going to see it more and more often in everyday life. But what encryption does not hide, and is going to be fundamental for what we're going to see in the next few slides, it's traffic data. Traffic data like who talks to whom, for how long, when, what protocols they're using, what ports they're using. Now, historically speaking, this did not seem to be as important as content, but as we will see, you can extract quite a large portion of information out of this traffic data. Now, so secrecy, well, privacy is about secrecy, but it's not maybe only about secrecy. This is a bit more exotic now. Unlinkability is another security property that we can say is relevant to secrecy. Quite a few people in the past 20 years of research have called it anonymity, but unlinkability is more general. Unlinkability is about hiding relationships. Which individual talks to which other individual or is related in some way, which individual is related to a particular item, or which two items are related to each other. Well, when it is relations between individuals, we can think of it as anonymity, but it's a bit broader. Now, these relationships can both be technical and sociological. So unlinkability is about finding things that are not as usual, a relation between me and someone else that is not, let's say, usual. So something special, me being in love with someone, me talking to someone in order to organize something. So we can see that it is really half a technical subject, half a sociological subject. And you can, of course, do an analysis on many levels. But as we will see, these two are quite linked together. Now, the trick is, and this is, attacking unlinkability is the job of traffic analysis, really, is that from low-level information, we try traffic data, which leaks, as we remember, from secrecy systems, encryption systems. We try to extract high-level information. So, just to give an example, for example, what we're going to do is, from lengths of packets, lengths of data, we're going to try to find out which pages on the web a user is accessing. But then this is not the end, because we can still, at the sociological level, from which pages were accessed, try to link intentions or beliefs or anything else to a particular user. So it can happen on many levels, but we're going to try to stick to the technical stuff for the moment. The first difficult thing is defining traffic data. And this is both a technical issue but also a legal issue, because in law, national and European, right now they're having quite a lot of trouble. It's difficult to define what is strictly traffic data, because network protocols, as you know, are layered. So each protocol runs on top of another protocol and therefore, you know, is included the traffic data of each protocol is included in the content data of the layer below it. So where do you strike the balance? I mean, he's saying that it is the data used for routing. I mean, this is not very good. Is it the data that is not directly written by the user? This is not very satisfactory either, because, you know, the user, by clicking on something as well, can have content. All management information, maybe? I mean, we don't really know how much of the management information is traffic and how much can be content sometimes. So, usually when people talk about content data, they think of sender, receiver addresses, equipment ID, time, length, protocols, services, intermediaries that a communication went through. Of course, there is location data as well, which is sometimes confused with traffic data and can be used as well to do traffic analysis and location analysis, which is the GSM cell someone is in, the X11 cell, or Bluetooth neighbors, whatever other wireless protocol neighbors you have, anything that leaks and is not really the content, the hardcore content of the communication. Okay? Now, how is conceptually traffic analysis performed? Well, Alice, here, wants to communicate with Sam. Sam is a server or can be a peer, it doesn't really matter. He does that through a network, of course, with encrypted communications if we want to. But this network leaks some information, which is the traffic data, as defined before. My printer died at that point, so I patched it up with Android and stuff. I hope it doesn't bother me too much. Then this traffic data is fed into a traffic analysis engine. And this traffic analysis engine outputs the results we would like. Who is related to whom, who talks to whom, who accesses which resource on the web, and the rest. Of course, this traffic analysis engine cannot work from void. If you know nothing about the word, you cannot make correlations about this word, and you cannot reconstruct some structure of this word. So this traffic analysis engine needs to have some prior knowledge about the word. And this is very important. The quality of this prior knowledge is pretty much going to affect straightforwardly the quality of the results here. And therefore, we're going to discuss a bit more later about prior knowledge. But it is very important to have it. And the ways we can you get it are different every time. Now, maybe we should say a word about this prior knowledge. Now, you can use this prior knowledge in order to see what is normal and what is not. So if everybody in here talks to everybody else on a daily basis, this is normal. The fact that someone someday talks to someone else means nothing. It's completely random. But the word has some structure. And this is not only the technical word. It is also the social word. Not everybody talks to everybody every day. And having a knowledge of both the technical structure, for example, the length that result from a particular technical protocols on the wires, but also the structure of the social word, who is likely to talk to whom, or what does it that mean if they talk to each other, has to be present to some degree in here in order to make any inference that makes sense. This is why you have technology and sociology being affecting this prior. This prior also can be created using anonymized data. So this is, for example, large databases which cannot actually link any particular entry to individuals, but as a whole can, for example, say what is normal and what is not. So we will see that a perverse effect of this whole science is that even anonymized data can be dangerous in bulk. Okay? So this is a theoretical example, very nice, very clean. Now, let's start thinking about the real world and how we would go about analyzing real traffic using HTTPS. HTTPS is a normal HTTP run over SSL or TSL, depending on the flavor. I assumed that most people here know how what TSL does, at least, not how it works. Well, SSL just encrypts stuff and adds some checksums for authenticity, but it does not hide the length of the communication, and this is the important thing you need to know to follow this presentation. It just makes it a bit fuzzy because it adds it up to 8-byte boundaries, so that's all. Okay, let's choose a concrete example to attack it and see how SSL cannot really provide the privacy properties we really want. Let's choose a public and collaborative news server. When I say news server, I mean a web server that serves news, like CNN.com or BBC or IndyMedia or whatever. Well, more IndyMedia than CNN, because you can't really contribute to CNN, I hope. So it is public. Everybody can see all the entries, everybody can see all the comments. So if you remember, the secrecy dimension of privacy seems not to be very important. Everything you write is public, it's news, everybody can read it. It is collaborative, everybody can contribute. But we still have some privacy concerns, and they are that you do not want to be linked as an individual who uses this server to items that are posted or items that are read. Now, well, that makes sense to me, but maybe an example would help. If I read lots of reports about the preparations for an international demonstration, then maybe that leaks some information about me. Maybe, well, just the fact that I know that it happens already leaks some information. Maybe the fact that I'm reading maps of this particular place or I try to find places to stay in that particular place leaks the fact that I'm going there, and immediately makes a connection between me and this international event. So you do not want to be linked with particular items. So a very rude idea would be, why don't we just plug Apache SSL in front of this server, encrypt everything, and the problem is solved? Can that solve our problem? As we said, SSL will provide secrecy, which we don't really require, but will it actually protect us, protect the unlinkability of the items? Okay. Well, maybe I should show both slides next to each other. This is the model we have. And this is populating it with real stuff. Can everybody see that blue? Okay. We take the traffic data to be the length of the SSL packets. As we said, SSL does not hide the length, it only pads it to 8-byte boundaries. If a block cipher is used, otherwise it doesn't pad it at all. Now, the prior knowledge we're going to have in order to perform our traffic analysis is the link between particular items and their lengths. And as you remember, we can get that because all the items on the server are public. So this is not really hidden. Then the aim of all this exercise will be, of course, as we said before, to link particular individual requests to items on the server. And the engine we're going to use to start with as a first approximation, first draft, is going to use very simple statistics. So if we know how long each resource on the server is, then for each request that we see, we have its length, and therefore we can match it to one or more resources using trivial histograms. I try to stay away from the maths. I mean, for this example, there are hardly any maths. There is just matching of the length to particular pages. But feel free at the end, in the discussion or in private, to come and ask me of how the technicalities work. Now, very simple, very straightforward. Everybody has thought of it. You know, this is not magic. And what kind of results do we get? Well, there are problems with this approach. The length of the packets give us 9 bits of entropy. Now, I don't want to get into technical details, but it means that we can differentiate between 2 to the 9 different pages. But of course, in the word, and probably on this server as well, there are more than 2 to the 9 pages. And in practice, we will get collisions between the lengths of these pages well before we reach that number, at around 2 to the 5 pages. That is not a very big number. Which means that we cannot actually find uniquely which page was accessed just from the length of the page. Okay? And, well, that is a result, you know, that people anticipated. You know, the length is a very small number, and there are so many pages out there that have the same length that we cannot actually pinpoint them with accuracy, just knowing the length. There is some information that is lost. Funnily enough, there are also some other interesting results. If you look at the histogram, most of the pages that are confused with each other are small, less than 100 kilobytes, let's say. And the bigger the pages, well, the resources in that case, get, the easier it is to differentiate them using only their lengths. Okay, so this is a warning to all the people who would think of using SSL in order to hide which music files they're sharing. This does not work. If someone knows the length of the file, pretty much they will find which song is traded just by its length. Of course, this depends on the encoding and everything, but multimedia files are more difficult to hide than small text files or even small images. Then, by adding a few more heuristics, such as how many links to images there are on this page, because we can see these on the wire, they are automatically downloaded, or how long the request was, because up to now we only do traffic analysis on the reply from the server to the client. Some information is given, but if we already know the information given by the reply of the server to the client, this information is indeed very, very small. Very little information is given, order of magnitude, one bit or something. It does not give you much. So it's clear that either we need to say that, well, this is pretty much a failure, because for big servers with lots of files, this approach will not work, or find something else. Now, as we said before, and this is really important, I want to stress it, if there is one thing you can get out of this presentation, is that there is structure in the word, okay? And traffic analysis is about using that structure, finding it and using it. So, requests, sequences of requests on a server are not random. I mean, there are resources that are automatically downloaded as soon as you download one page, such as images or frames or whatever applets, flash animations you want. But what was the last time you navigated a website completely by writing random URLs in the browser? I mean, that never happens. I mean, maybe this audience has more probability of doing it than the average person, but really, I don't think it is very common. So usually people follow a particular structure, the structure of the site, in order to navigate it. And maybe we can use this fact in order to be able to pinpoint with more accuracy what they're looking at. And indeed we can. What we do is the following. We create a pretty graph like that, well, at least the mass of it, where each circle is a node that represents a particular URL, a particular resource on the website. Then, just by looking at many requests, we can create little arrows between them, and we can attach a weight to each of these arrows, which is how often, given that the user has requested this resource N, will request another resource. Okay? And in theory, this graph could be completely populated, but in practice, it is quite sparse, because pages are not linked with all the other pages. So, at the same time as we have the probability of the transition, we also have the probability of emitting a particular symbol. Now, these symbols, this is math talk, but in practice are just the lengths you can see on the wire, the encrypted lengths, the lengths of the encrypted data. And this construction here, this mathematical construction, is called a hidden Markov model. It's not new at all. It's been researched for years in maths. It's been used for 20 or more years in natural language processing. So it's something that has been studied before. And it's hidden because, in theory, the attacker cannot really see, the inside can only see the symbols, S, emitted. And we all agree, I hope, if it is not clear, there are going to be questions about it, that an attacker can construct such model if they have logs of the server, even anonymized logs. And I tell you, you have to believe me, and of course ask me later if you want more details on how it works, that the Viterbi algorithm, given a sequence of lengths S, will give you the most plausible path N for that sequence. Okay? And this is probability theory, straightforward, stochastic processes and the rest. Okay? It's a very simple algorithm. I choose not to present it here because I think it's not the main focus. So, given a sequence, you are able to find the most plausible path. And that, hopefully, gives much better results than the very simplistic approach of treating each request individually. So, the more transitions you're studying, the more symbols you're studying, the bigger the probability you actually find the right sequence of nodes that was accessed, the right sequence of resources that was accessed. And I've done some experiments. With 5 transitions, we find 80% of the sequences right. Now, even with partial information, even if you
you don't know all the lengths and stuff, you still find quite a lot of writes, quite a few times the right sequence of notes, but of course the accuracy goes down, and when you only have one resource to study one length instead of five, the accuracy is pretty much the same as the simplistic approach we used before, because they're like, they're independent. It's also quite difficult to assess and judge how accurate it is, because this is, you know, what if the traffic analysis gives you four good results and one that is wrong? You know, out of the five nodes that you know the length, what if it gives you four resources that are actually the requests and one that is not? I mean, it's difficult to say how many do you need? How close is the result you get to the actual route, to the actual sequence of requests? You need to have a metric for that, which I don't for the moment. And then what about content that is the same and therefore has the same length but has different URLs? In the model we presented, this appears to be different, but in practice it is the same. So it's a bit fuzzy, this result. I mean, this is an order of magnitude. Don't really take it too seriously, but it's a good result, I find. Then incomplete data, and this is the cool thing about the Viterbi algorithm and all this statistical stuff. You can actually create models that work and will give you meaningful and useful results from incomplete data, either incomplete sequences of lengths when you're actually doing traffic analysis, or incomplete priors. And this is logical if you think about it. You can't possibly have seen all the possible paths that a client could have taken on the server, all the possible requests. But using techniques and finding the right balances, you can actually make this engine find the most plausible sequences of requests, even if it has not been seen before as a whole. Now, I would like to discuss for a few more minutes on how do we get the prior knowledge. Now, the prior knowledge, as I did it to start with, was extracted from HTTP logs. And HTTP logs contain everything you want, even anonymized, even without knowing the IP, because that would not be very proper. They contain the URL requested, they contain the length of the resource that was given back to the client, and also they contain the sequence of the requests. Okay? Now, of course, each browser has its particular way of requesting resources, and if you write your own, you can write your own way of requesting these resources. But the advantage of using logs is that if a browser of that type has accessed this page before, you don't really need to think of all the possible ways it can access it. You will see it in your data. You will have a particular sequence that came from that browser that will give you, in the engine, the right sequence of resources. So there are clear advantages of using logs, and another advantage is that you actually see the real weight of each page. So two pages might have the same structure, but one page can be more likely to be accessed than another. And this gives some information. If you see a page of that length being accessed immediately, if you have the logs, you know that the one that has more requests is more likely to have been accessed than the other. And this is where sociology really blurs. But some of my colleagues said to me, well, it's not very realistic that an attacker will get your HTTP logs, because you can burn them as soon as they're written to your disk. You can just send them to dev null, and this is end of story. You can't do your attacks anymore. Well, this is not true, because if you do a study between the structure of the requests that is extracted from the logs and the structure of the request that can be reconstructed from the static structure of the HTML pages, these are very close to each other. And in practice, as we said before, because users usually follow links, you can create your hidden Markov model without the HTTP logs, just by looking at the static structure of the pages. It is not going to be as accurate as if you were using logs, but it will give you the right result most of the times. So, no silver bullet. There is no way of hiding, as I've seen for the moment, the structure, even if you hide the logs. So, this is pretty much the end of the technical stuff. Now, let's make an assessment. What is the future for traffic analysis as an attack tool, and especially as an attack tool for law enforcement? Because given the whole debate about traffic retention for the moment, it's quite a hot topic. Now, encryption is something well known to people like hackers or people like scientists working computer security, but it has not yet hit the street big time. And it is going to take a few years until it is properly implemented out there, more importantly, properly used by end users. So really, encryption is not going to be such a problem for a few years in law enforcement, we believe. Then, as we saw recently in the US, with what the FBI did, hacking will become quite a legal and legitimate thing to do for law enforcement agencies. And it is by order of magnitude more easy to actually hack into some criminals or not computer and extract data this way than using traffic analysis, which requires very sophisticated methods that doesn't give really accurate results, that requires computing power beyond what we would really want an attack to be. And then real-world investigative methods, using traffic analysis or not, because traffic analysis has its real-world, you know, brothers and sisters, friendship networks and all the rest, even effective than traffic analysis at the large scale in the virtual world. Now, at the same time as all these, you know, quite a, you know, useless picture of traffic analysis, one could say that, well, access to traffic data is becoming more and more easy because of the laws that are being passed slowly, but also retention of traffic data is becoming the norm slowly, or will, unfortunately. And therefore, a large amount of traffic data will be available for, you know, law enforcement to trail through, make models, and play around, really. So, also, more experience exists in the circles of law enforcement than in the open domain about these issues. And therefore, there are reasons to believe that they already have more effective techniques, they already have better ways of reasoning about traffic data than we do. So that is an argument for saying that traffic analysis seems to be increasingly used. And then business by design is the last factor, the fact that technologies, as they're implemented in the mass scale, are actually friendly to the interception of traffic data. And when they're not friendly, they're requested and designed to be friendly in order to assist law enforcement in their requests. Now, the most interesting question, of course, I hope for this audience, is what is the future for privacy? Well, as we said before, there are technical things we can do, and there are legal and social things we can do. Falling traffic analysis has been studied in the past. By people looking at anonymous communication infrastructure, mixed networks, dynamic cryptographers networks, a whole apparatus of techniques to hide correspondence between senders and receivers. Then, at the link level, for the application we discussed before, for example, web server serving news, traffic padding and shaping could be used. It is actually a topic of research in quite a few universities and other people around, and therefore the better we understand it, the more it has chances of helping against traffic analysis, but it's quite far from being a technology that can be deployed yet. And then of course more research into generally privacy enhancing technologies, how you can provide services without really needing to access personal information, or limiting the personal information you need to access in order to provide a service needs to be researched further, because people might care about their privacy, but people also want some services from the real world and the virtual world, and therefore are quite keen to give some private information to have access to these services. Now, what is the minimum information that can be given, and what are the technological ways of ensuring that only the minimum information is given? is a hot subject of research. Now, at the same time, of course, and it is not really my topic, but we should not forget about this, legislation, data protection and other legislations are important. We not only protect ourselves with technology, but also by law. Adequate protection of traffic data is very important. If traffic data is to be retained, and we're going to have a long discussion, I hope, about that in 2 hours' time here, when Casper is going to talk about these issues, it needs to be protected properly, as is content data, which for the moment you need a warrant to get. And then in general, and this is a cultural thing maybe, we need to better understand the balance between an individual's right to privacy and how inalienable this right is, and also society's interest and the public interest of, you know, detecting and deterring crime and all the rest. So, this is it. I wish to open the floor for a few minutes that are left. But before that, I should maybe, as people ask questions, write down my name, and also say that if you have any demonstrations demonstrating either threats, practical threats to privacy resulting from traffic analysis, or practical ways of protecting privacy, we are planning a demonstration in February, I believe, to be done in conjunction with the European Union, to kick in a debate about the sensitivity of traffic data. So please come and find me later if you have a presentation to submit to this. Thank you.
Where can you be found? Oh, thanks.
If there are issues that were not clear from the talk, or if you want to go into more technical detail, because we have a bit of time, we can do so. Feel free to ask everything.
Why have these services been losing ground in the last year? It's really hard to find an anonymizer. And, for example, the Freedom Network, I hear it's going down. Why is this happening?
Well, I do not really believe in conspiracies as such. The Freedom Network, now it's a public fact that went down because of economic constraints. I mean, surveillance sells because it can be used for marketing as well as law enforcement, and this is very important. Many techniques that traffic analysis comes up with can be used for marketing. Well, anonymity and privacy doesn't really sell. Now, why is it? I don't know. I mean, we should maybe go out there and ask everyday people why they don't value their privacy enough to pay for it. But services such as the Freedom Network, generally, in order to do anonymous communications properly, you need an infrastructure that is extremely expensive, and if too few people use it, it's not worth it economically. So this is how it fell. Now, other anonymizers are still around. SafeWeb closed its public access a few months ago. Which was a pity. I mean, the SSL attacks we described could work against SafeWeb as well, because it was using SSL in order to anonymize it. But it was something that could be improved rather than stopped. Anonymize is still out there, but I know that for many internet cafes and other public access areas, you can't access them. They're blocked. They're blocked like pornography, funnily enough. So, I don't know. Very expensive, and sometimes difficult to deal with.
What I get from your speech is that if you take log files that are somewhat like anonymized, like IP addresses removed or parts of IP addresses removed, and you apply the right algorithms to them and use things like hidden Markov models, etc., that you can extract a lot of data that was supposed to be not there by we'll be removing part of the IP addresses, correct? So what I wonder is how far do you think, or how far do you know, are the marketing guys in terms of using these algorithms?
Okay, I mean, the whole area of anonymization is a dark science by itself, and different people mean different things when they talk about anonymizing data. What most of the people think when they say anonymizing data, they take the data protection legislation and they say this data should not be uniquely linkable to a particular individual, or you should not be able to link it back to a particular individual. This does not mean that your profile, your purchasing profile, your access profile cannot be used. It just cannot be linked back to you, and therefore they believe it cannot prejudice you if you go and request a service or anything like that. Now, what I'm saying is not that you can use this data and feed them into models in order to link that back to users. What I'm saying is that you can use this data in order to create profiles that will further help you in de-anonymizing, in linking particular resources to users in the future. Because as you know what are the usual patterns, as you know what different kinds of users will do, you can pinpoint with more accuracy what users have actually done in the future. So the more you know about your work, the more you are able to make guesses, because statistics is about guesses, about what people have done, given a particular set of data, of course. You don't make guesses from nothing. But yeah.
What do you think? The basic presentation that you did was more or less focusing around in the media threat model. About that was what I guess. The biggest problem there is not only what people view it, but what people post, because that's the more interesting thing. And of course, you could, if you are really paranoid, using an anonymizer to send messages, let's say to indie media, but you have still the length thing. Have you done any work on trying to correlate lengths with connections?
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt.
Have you done any try to find out from the length of hosting who posted it?
Yes, I mean, of course, all the examples I used are analyzing the replies from the server to the client. And therefore, one can say that this is irrelevant for posting, but it's not true. In practice, you can do exactly the reverse. So analyze the lengths of the post from the client to the server in order to find who has posted what. And you know the length of the postings afterwards because they're public. So in that sense, the problem is just reversed. But in the long run, when you've seen both the length of the person, of the communication of the post and the length of the post itself, you can apply exactly the same techniques in order to do these things. You can also combine the two techniques because you never post randomly. You first browse somehow and then you say post here, my comment. And therefore you can use a mixture of requests and replies of the server in order to better pinpoint who has posted which item, which is the most dangerous thing, I agree. I just a comment also about the IndieMedia model. I chose the IndieMedia model because it's quite pure in the sense that there is no secrecy requirement. And therefore it's dead clear that the only thing we want is unlinkability, and that makes, you know, the picture much more clear for everybody, I think.
I got two questions. The first is about your presented example was quite specific. For example, you researched new servers. And I think the impact of the place where you place your sensor is also quite important. Do you think you can generalize to some extent the results? And the second question is, are there some actual tools that are available to perform such traffic analysis as you presented to us?
Okay, yes. The first question is about, are these results generalizable? Okay, I chose something very specific because, funnily enough, there has been 20-25 years of research in anonymous networks, but there has been very little research in the open literature, at least, about attacks and traffic analysis attacks, and very few techniques in order to test the effectiveness of anonymous communications. So I thought that, hey, now it's time to do something practical. And I think the techniques used here can be used further than just the news server, the web server represented. I mean, using hidden Markov models as a general technique, using histograms and statistics can be generalized. But is at every attack, every hack, you know, is applied somewhere, but you can generalize something about it. Then the second question, are there any tools to perform that? I have these tools, I've made these tools. They're just a collection of quite short Perl scripts, pretty much doing the maths, and the other ones compiling the statistical tables you need from HTTP logs or the structures of the HTML pages. They're pretty straightforward to make. I mean, if you just spend a few weeks studying the maths you need and the little tricks, and then you spend another month doing the Perl scripts, you're pretty much done. And I have that, but I don't want to publish them yet. I want to actually do some more experiments on them and then publish them. What I don't have, and people here should start thinking of, is tools to protect against such attacks.
One more question about... Excuse me? The next question is about how resistant are your models about ads, because most commercial websites nowadays put in some random length ads, some JavaScript that does banner rotation, stuff like that, so the length of web pages is not exactly constant.
Yes, the length of the pages is not constant, I agree. But you can tweak the model, if I can find the slide, yes. Here, no, this is not the one. You can actually tweak the model to take for each node many symbols, so you can actually say that this page can be can give that length or that length or that length with these probabilities, and it will find the most probable one still. The second thing is that the length of the pages is not as random as one might think. I agree, banner ads have different lengths, but these are completely different resources. JavaScript can produce fancy random results, but usually the lengths of the scripts are static. But I agree that there is quite a lot of randomness in the lengths, and they're not always static as well. So, for example, in the Indie Media model, a particular article has a different length depending on how many people have commented on it, and every time some new person comments, the length just increases. So, but you can model these behaviors by taking account of the time and the most recent length, yes. Okay, well, feel free to either write to me. I'll be around today and tomorrow in the Congress. So, if you have any more questions or any more specific details, feel free to come and talk to me. Thanks a lot.
I wanted only to make the remark that there are some attacks specified against Mixmaster networks and other networks by Andreas Fitzmann, for instance. And so there is done some research, but you are right,
yes,
in the sense that there is not a running Perl script,
usually. But the research they've done, I mean, is very valuable.